Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kind of take a look at weather now. It seemed like fall would never come, given those warm October temperatures, but kind of officially here now, and we'll talk about that with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman. Steve is Associate Vice Chancellor for Research at the UW, directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. And John Martin, professor and former chair of the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Our two weather guys, they come by the last Monday of every month to talk climate and weather, and we're certainly looking forward to your questions as we move along today. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Steve, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's great to be here on the last Monday of the month once again.
Yeah, and John, good to see you as
good
well.
Good to see you, Larry. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, why don't I turn your mic on? Then
no, maybe people would prefer you don't.
Oh, man. I tell you, well, now that I've got all the microphones set, we're good to go. Well, winter's on the way, for sure.
Finally.
To win. Nashville, it's already here.
how toasty was October? It was pretty toasty, wasn't it?
Yeah. This for the average temperature for the state was 4 or 5 degrees above normal.
Yeah, the first two-thirds of the month were really toasty. And then even last Saturday, a week ago Saturday, we had almost 80 degrees. Didn't we? It's incredible.
Any effects? I mean, what are the effects of when you get warm weather like that?
It took a long time for me to clear out my garden.
I think that's it. I think they're mostly that. When you get to the end of the month, if it's like this through November, then there are some serious effects on a variety of different things. But I think to this point, probably there's a lot of variability in the month of October from year to year. I'm not sure how much of an effect, a lasting effect especially, a warm October might have on the rest of the winter or late fall.
But 5 degrees is pretty. That's
all. Yeah, that's a lot.
That is a lot.
Yep, sure is.
We have callers online. Again, I'll remind you, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And by the way, if you have a weather photo, post it up on our Facebook page and maybe a question about some clouds or whatever, or just a pretty cloud picture. We always love to see them. Put them up on our Facebook page. Love to see those. And now let's go to Ed in West Allis. Ed, hi.
Well, those of us that are bus drivers in Milwaukee County, we'd like to know what type of snow fall you expect for the metro Milwaukee area this year. We had a terrible ice storm in Milwaukee on January 11th. 2017, where the municipalities did not salt, and it just caused all types of problems. So does this look like a large amount of snowfall year or not?
Oh.
Well, that you hit it right on the head with the ice, of course, and you know firsthand that ice is about the worst thing that can fall out of the sky, and freezing rain is even worse than the ice itself. So when you get a freezing rain event, that's a disaster for all kinds of transportation. And it's long-lasting. Impossible to say whether or not you get one of those in a winter, because that's very much a local forecast, local both in space and in time. But in the long range, we look for things such as what's the tropical Pacific and the convection, the thunderstorm activity over that doing at certain times of year like now, and seeing if that leads to any sort of chance to have a hedge against what the winter will be like. And right now, there's nothing like that out there, so there's no particularly strong signal. But my sense is, and it's not a casual statement, it's an honest statement, the last two winters have been relatively mild in our state in terms of snowfall and temperatures, with the exception of ice events, of course. And so I think if we fall back to what's actually a normal winter, it'll seem cold and snowy. So I'm going to say that we're going to remember this winter when we're done with it as snowier than the recent couple, even though I don't know yet whether I'm ready to say that the winter is going to be actually snowier than normal or not.
Yeah. There you go, Ed. We don't know for sure, but it's probably going to be, your guess is it's going to be...
If it's even close to normal, it'll seem cold and snowy.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
There we go. Thanks, Ed. Rob in Wallace, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Rob.
Hello, good morning. Yes. I watch the reader on my computer, especially in the summertime when my lawn needs watering. When I hear the forecast that there's precip progressing from west to east, I turn my computer on and I watch the radar. And it almost seems to me that when the rain approaches bodies of water like the Bay of Green Bay and Lake Michigan, the precip just dries up and not get no rain. Hmm. Now, does the bodies of water have any effect on precip?
Hmm. Yeah, but I would think it would go the other way in terms of there's two parts, I guess. One is the dynamical part and one is the thermodynamic part. And the thermodynamic part would be the evaporation of the water off the lake getting into the circulation system. And that'll be a function of the wind speed and also the temperature difference between the air and the lake. And that's one reason why you get a lot of snowfall downwind on the other side of the lake, downwind of the event that's occurring, lake effect snowfall. In the rain, particularly in the summertime, you would get enhanced evaporation, not as much. The winds could help, but I wouldn't expect it to kill the storm.
Depends on the time of day, too. If you get a sea breeze, you can pile up all of your low-level convergence, we call it, winds coming together from all directions at the ground that leads to an enhancement of thunderstorms. That can be some distance away from the lakefront itself, and so it leaves the real estate that's from wherever that convergence line is, some miles west of the shore of Lake Michigan, all the way to the lake, completely free of thunderstorms, and that can last all afternoon. In fact, many times it does. And then Green Bay is kind of interesting because of its geometry. It's a little finger of water that comes down, and the winds are all blowing perpendicular to the shore from the lakeside to the shore, and that creates a region of divergence over Green Bay. So that's a particular spot where you might see the desiccation, decay of thunderstorms as they move across Green Bay. If they're moving so rapidly, they might just feel that. It's possible.
Yeah.
Interesting. Thanks, Rob. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Ray in Rhinelander next. Hi, Ray. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I haven't called in for quite a long time. I was brought up with my grandparents and some of these other people that worked with nature and looking at natural signs. Now, we have amazing technology to predict things. I understand and the science behind it. But before that, there was this natural way, and there's been studies done on this, and I've been cataloging all these things. And have any of you ever been around or knew of anybody that would tell about the different natural signs of things to semi-predict weather or anything related to that with the animals and the insects? And I see it all around me. I'm just curious if any of you have ever heard or been involved with that somehow.
Okay. Yeah, no, not so much predicting the weather. I think people have looked at animal behavior and changes, whether it's animals or insects, as the climate has been changing and how that's impacted what their behavior has been, but not so much in terms of using it for forecasting.
Yeah, same for me. My dad used to tell me, we would take walks in the woods, and he used to tell me some stories and some pieces of information that might relate, to whether or not he was expecting this or that or the other thing in the long term, 2 or 3 months seasonal sort of forecast based on what he was seeing in the woods. We never kept track, so there's no particular verification of that. But I think there's little pieces of wisdom that are certainly embedded in those kinds of observations because they're based on really careful observation and correlation. The problem is they tend to be a little anecdotal, and so you remember the ones that worked and you forget the times that you thought something was coming and it didn't work, and that gets erased from your memory, so it's biased towards success.
Yeah, particularly if the ones that worked are big events.
Yeah, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's but it's certainly scientific at a certain level. There's no question about it.
Well, if the dog is acting funny or the cattle out on the farm are acting kind of weird and a storm comes.
Your joints are bothering you.
Yeah, and you're a professional who watches those things all the time for, commercial or just hobby reasons. You know something. Yeah. You definitely know something.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot for calling. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Steve, this is a doozy of a hurricane season.
Yeah, it was an interesting one. We You know, the forecast was for a slightly, you know, back in May, the forecast was for a slightly active year, and it turned out to be a pretty active year,
yeah,
particularly
sure
with regard to the number of, what do you call them when they're Category 3 and above?
Major hurricanes.
Yeah, thank you. My mind went out there. and landfall. This is the first time we've had two Category 5 hurricanes, which are the strongest category. Hit land since 2005 or something like that.
I don't even think we had two that year, did we? Or maybe we did, but it's because I don't think Katrina
was
Category 5.
No, that's right.
It might be the first time ever.
Yeah, yeah.
So are the categories based solely on wind speed, or what are they based on?
Yeah, it's based on wind speed. maximum sustained wind speeds.
Yeah,
right.
And I forget what they are. I always have to look them up.
Yeah, they're kind of weird. The numbers don't fall into, you know, not like every 10 miles per hour or something, or 20 miles per hour. It's weird numbers, but yeah, they're defined by wind speeds.
But if you got a 5, you're up there at 100 miles an hour, or what?
140, I think, is the minimum threshold.
40 miles an hour?
Sustained winds, too. Think about that. Sustained.
Yeah.
So that's a 4-minute average or something, 2-minute average.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, so it has to go at least for a couple minutes.
Yeah, it can't be a gust, a puff type of thing. It's got to be sustained.
Even though they can be measured, but they're not the ones that count.
Yeah.
George in Ogama, your turn. Hi, George.
Hey, how are you doing?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Predicting your summers and the winters.
Good luck.
Yeah, it's hot.
The summers are going to be warmer than the winters.
Yeah.
it's called watching the equinox winds.
Oh.
So
you got the first day of spring, and the day before spring, you watch the winds where they come from, and that will be your weather for the first 2 months of summer.
We'll have to look at that. Have to look at that data.
You do the same with the winds, and that'll be your second 2 days of summer. And after that, you watch the third day, and that will be your last 2 months of summer, and the same with winter.
My guess is that verifies 5% of the time.
I've watched this, and I've had people in Iowa at these big farm where they predict about prices of everything that's going on with the farmers.
Well, I tell you what, we got to take a break. On this, George, and we'll ponder that, and we'll come back right after the news, and we'll talk some more about it. Thank you for calling. We'll be back after the news. Fall weather is finally here, and some of Wisconsin has seen snow as well. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We are talking weather, and I'm losing my voice here suddenly, with our two guests, Steve Ackerman and John Martin.
Hey, Larry, how's it going? Yeah. Why don't you get some water there?
Let's go to Scott in Kenosha.
Yeah.
Scott, hi.
Hello.
What can we do for you?
I have a question. I wasn't great in science, but rain comes from clouds. Clouds come from the evaporation of water. And I would think in the summer, when it's above 32 degrees, water evaporates into the atmosphere. Where does the clouds come from, or is evaporation just a constant during winter when it's so cold?
Hmm.
So, yeah, I would say that the atmospheric, the water that's in the atmosphere, most of which is invisible because it's in the form of a gas, is coming from evaporation of water off the surface. And that's going to be a function of the temperature difference between the water in the air, the wind speed, and the pressure that you're at. When you're forming a cloud, what you need is moisture in the atmosphere, but you also need some forcing mechanism to lift the air. And then as that air is lifted, the pressure goes down, and that it decreases the temperature, and that increases the relative humidity, and eventually a cloud will form.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you can get water vapor to sublimate from the frozen water stage to the vapor stage over a snow field, over an ice field. It's not as it's not the most plentiful way to get water vapor into the atmosphere. Certainly evaporation's more plentiful, or it results in more plentiful water vapor. But you can even do that, because there's days around here, especially in this state, where it's really cold, daytime high is 12 degrees, but your snow pile shrinks.
Yeah.
Because right. it's sublimating away without a puddle. Yeah. So there's water that comes, there's water changing into vapor all through the year. Mm-hmm. But as Steve points out, it varies depending on the season.
Okay, so temperature doesn't matter?
Not really.
Not really.
It's a modulator, but it doesn't, it never puts a kibosh on evaporation or sublimation.
All right, I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Love to hear from you. Kelly in Green Bay emailed in, during October or November, we can sometimes get snow. It seems that the temperature of the ground really determines how much snow stays on the ground. For example, sometimes we can get up to 4 inches of predicted snow, but when it hits the ground, it mostly melts and we end up with an inch or maybe a slushy mess. My question is there a snow prediction that takes into account the temperature of the ground or pavement to account for this?
That's a really good question.
That is, and
I think that your emergency crews and road crews know about this. And so they have monitors on the ground and sometimes embedded beneath the ground to tell them what the temperature is a meter or 2 meters below ground. And that helps them assess whether or not and what chemicals they ought to use to get rid of potential ice that comes from frozen precipitation. Because her point's a really good one. There's a lot of energy stored in the ground. It gradually does get used up, some of it, and so you can end up not having that insurance later on, a month or so from now. But for a while, it's there, and people do monitor that. I'm not sure it makes its way into a forecast from the National Weather Service, although I could be wrong.
Yeah, I don't think it does either. Yeah. But, yeah, if you watch it, and part of that is going to depend on what the surface is, right? Because as you watch a snowfall, first when it hits the ground, it's evaporating or melting no matter where it hits. But eventually the grass blades get colder
and it begins to
settle on those, whereas on the sidewalks and the streets where it still stays warm.
Yeah, that's right. The first kind of accumulating snow of the year, it looks like that almost always.
Yeah.
That's right.
Interesting.
That's
a good point. But I don't think they forecast for that. I think they base it on, the 12x12 piece of wood that collects the
snowfall.
That's
right. They may make a statement about, it'll accumulate on grass but not streets, but that might be about the limit of what they say. Yeah.
Interesting. David at Superior emails, what causes hoarfrost? What conditions are needed for it? And describe what it, I think most people know, but just describe it anyway.
Yeah, hoarfrost is frost that occurs when the object, and I usually think of hoarfrost as on glass because that's when it's the really prettiest, but you get that really pretty feathery features of the ice on glass, but it can occur on trees and branches and other things as well. And when the air cools down and you get to the dew point or the frost point, because the temperature is below freezing, you'll get ice to form instead of dew.
Yeah, and sometimes you get a combination of just the regular frost process that Steve described and then freezing fog, where fog fog is just like you see any other time of the year, little very tiny water droplets, liquid water droplets. And the smaller they are, the lower the temperature can be, and they can still stay in the liquid form. But if they hit something that's already ice or that's cold enough to be ice, like a twigs of a tree, they'll start growing these long tendrils of ice because the ice just forms from the little liquid water droplets hitting a frozen surface. And that's really gorgeous.
Yeah.
So that combination can be among the most picturesque things you get in the wintertime.
And a lot of times in that fog, the wind is just really, really slow.
Very
and that
slow.
Gives you that buildup in that direction.
It's just gorgeous.
The frost grows.
But it's not common. But it's
very
really
pretty.
Summer.
And you mentioned fog, and I was thinking back to a week ago watching a football game in New England.
Oh, yeah. Mm. They had nasty fog. Mm.
And the fog rolled in, and I had friends and some family members who were at the game.
Yeah.
And they were up high. they said you could hardly see the field.
Yeah.
Well, Belichick has control over that.
It's just another way to win.
That's right.
Get ahead and bring fog in.
And somebody else wondered, is it true that there is no snowflake, that there are no two snowflakes that look alike?
I will say that that's the case until somebody can prove it wrong.
So you'll live the rest of your life
that way.
Without any issue.
Although actually, the shape of a snowflake is a function of its temperature, of the environment around it, and the water vapor pressure around it. And so we always have these small differences in temperature and vapor pressure. And so as since each snowflake has its own unique path, that's why people say that, you know, there's no two snowflakes exactly alike. Mm-hmm. However, back in the 1970s, Nancy Knight, who was a cloud physicist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research and was doing experiments in pressure chambers, generated cubical ice. You know, normally ice is six-sided, and she was able, under a certain pressure and temperature conditions, to generate cubical ice. And so she had two that were exactly the same size.
Wow.
And so it was actually the cover on the Journal of Irreproducible Results.
Yeah.
And she ended up on the Johnny Carson show. So talking about it. So,
pretty interesting.
So there, I guess there is one example where they were the same, which means it's proved that it's a false statement.
Of course, right? But how many water molecules are in any given snow crystal?
Well, I don't think you could grow cubicle ice crystals in our atmosphere.
Okay, so it's not quite natural. Yeah, right. That's interesting.
Wow. On that note, let's go to Ray in Whitefish Bay. Hi, Ray.
Hey, good morning. I had a follow-up question about the clouds and the winter, the sublimation. When you get those big storms, low pressures coming in from the West Coast, are they carrying moisture from the ocean all the way over to Wisconsin, or are they picking up moisture as they roll along? Or, you know, where's the majority of water coming from?
Yeah, that's a good question. That depends on the nature of the storm, where it is and what kind of circulation it has at what latitude and longitude. Most of the storms we get here in our state have already had a large fraction of the water that might have come across with them from the Pacific Ocean wrung out over the Rocky Mountains. Were there no Rocky Mountains, we'd have a pretty much direct impact. Well, we'd be directly impacted by water off the Pacific just as well as we are off water off the Gulf of Mexico. I'd say that if I had to make a guess, seat of my pants here, I'd say most of the water that falls over us at any season likely has its origin somewhere over the Gulf of Mexico.
Okay. Oh, but I'm thinking about those winter storms, you know, that are coming, you know, North Dakota, South Dakota, you know, or from Canadian.
Mm-hmm.
So they're replenishing themselves as they travel.
Oh, you bet they are.
Even when it's 0 degrees or 10 degrees.
You bet. Yep, they are. And even then, I think most of our water in those winter storms comes from the Gulf of Mexico. Yep.
Oh, the fronts meeting, right? The cold hitting the warm moisture.
And the circulation of the storm has a very large extent. So if you might have your storm center over Milwaukee, but the circulation extends all the way down to Chattanooga and New Orleans. And okay. So it's raking the Gulf of Mexico, raking the eastern part of the Atlantic, western part of the Atlantic Ocean. So there's a lot of sources. It's really interesting question you're asking, but that's right.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Dave on Facebook asks, was the big storm which just hit Upper Michigan and Lake Superior more intense than normal for this time of year? And I'm thinking, actually, I'm not familiar with the Michigan storm. I was thinking about the Minnesota, the storm that came through northern Minnesota and northern Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. They got a pile of snow here.
Yeah. I don't think it's unusual. And even today, there's one in New England that's going to make the news. The national news will be all over it. Sea level pressure is very low. The circulation's strong. There'll be a lot of beach erosion and so on. But these things are fairly common as we transfer from the end of autumn into the beginning of winter, which really, I guess, begins mid to early November. So we're right about at that boundary. So every year, and I was growing up as a kid, or maybe every other year, Steve might remember this too, you get these kind of autumn gales, these October storms in New England and New York State that are memorable. I mean, the winds blow. It's no snow, but there's rain. It's kind of an exciting day. And I remember them being quite common in the last couple of weeks of October, and so we got one today. I bet the same is true of these storms, like the one that just came across northern Minnesota and Michigan in the last couple of weeks. There's been a couple of them, actually, more than one.
Yeah.
Well, we've got some great songs about the weather.
We're approaching November 10th.
That was an enormous storm, wasn't it?
It was tremendous.
That was a big storm, yeah.
And we've had several like it in the intervening 30 or so years, or 40 or so years now. Yeah.
We've just gotten a lot better at predicting them.
That's right.
Right, when they occur.
Eric in Beloit has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Eric.
Hello, good afternoon. I have a good example of sublimation for you to use, and then I have a question about snowfall prediction.
Okay.
So, which do you want first?
The example.
Oh, okay. I use this in my classes, but the formation of ice crystals on the inside of a ice cream container in your freezer, the liquid sublimes, the water sublimes out of the ice cream, and then the cooler lid collects it as water crystals, ice crystals. or in your freezer, too.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Right.
Yep, that's right.
Yep. Yeah, now, my question, when you say there's going to be 4 inches of snow, is that based on a ideal model with frozen grounds, kind of going back to the question before, or is that based on the amount of water that's going to fall and the density of the snow, or how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think if I were making a forecast that we have 4 inches of snow coming, I wouldn't make it in October and November because it's too tricky, like the prior caller in your question refers to. Some of it will melt when it hits the ground. It's hard to know what the total amount will be. So in January and February, when you don't have to worry about the ground really returning too much to the snow to melt it away, 4 inches of snow in that forecast is going to mean about 0.4 of an inch of liquid equivalent precipitation. And the ratio from rain to snow is about 10 to 1. But that varies, mm-hmm. as you're pointing out, with the snow density. If it's really, really cold air, that'll go way up to like 20 to 1, sometimes 30 to 1. So one has to try to keep that in mind. But there's no hard, fast rules about it. There's just a broad categories that you might be compelled to use. But that's probably the best you can do.
Okay, so more or less, how much is going to accumulate?
Yeah, right, right. Based on that ratio and based on how much how much precipitation you expect in the liquid form, if it were melted down to fall, you can make an estimate of the depth of the snow that you'll get.
Well, wait a minute, let's go back here. So yeah. it's how much is going to accumulate on the ground or how much is going to accumulate on the snowboard?
Oh, it's on the snowboard.
It's on the snowboard.
Sorry,
not on
I
the
might
ground.
Have missed
right.
that. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Because that's the verification.
Correct.
Right? You
want
to get that right.
That's correct.
So, yeah, it's how much actually hits the ground, not how much would pile up at the end of the storm.
Yeah, because that's controlled, as you're pointing out, by other things.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
All right. Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Tom on Facebook asks, I think he's got a photo of it we emailed, and it's a small image. But have you guys heard of a cloud formation called the Hand of God or Fist of God? Saw a remarkable photo online, but no explanation of how or why it forms. Mm. And I believe that as I look at the photo, it looks like a fist, an arm and a fist.
Is it that thing right there?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. So I don't think I have any comment on it.
We're I tried to enlarge it, but it won't enlarge. Yeah. So unfortunately.
Oh, that I see. That does look odd. It looks almost like an astronomical galaxy or something.
Yeah, or maybe something like a Mimatis type environment forms that or something. I don't know.
Well, that's one we can't deal with, I guess.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
What about John? Turn to you for a minute. There have been some changes on the Environmental Protection Agency website.
Hmm.
Do you know about those?
I guess they've taken away a lot of references to studies that have suggested that the climate's warming, and there's evidence that they've taken off of the websites, as far as I understand it, so it's fraudulent.
Yeah. So it's fraudulent?
Oh, that's fraudulent. Yeah, I mean, this
fraudulent is, that they took it off?
Yes. This is stuff that's been determined by, peer review and by, skeptical colleagues in a blind review of results, which has led to conclusions that were now taken off the website. That's a fraudulent act, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I had another question that I wanted to bring up, and it was back to Steve because we had this come up again on the last show, and it relates to contrails, and you have seen a few more contrails recently.
Yeah, it was a great contrail day about, what was that, like Thursday or Wednesday?
Or last
something
Saturday.
Like that? Was it last Saturday? Yeah, it was just scattered.
For those who are scratching their head, what are
contrail? So, contrail is called, it's an acronym for condensation trail. It's as jets fly high, if the water vapor and temperature in the upper atmosphere where they're flying is good, you can get these clouds that'll form, these trails that'll form, and they'll just look like linear lines. And again, if the temperature is good up there, it can stay around for hours, and that's what we had on that Saturday. You just saw all these crisscrossing lines.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
It was actually really pretty.
And we always get questions about contrails.
They are not contrails. We sometimes get those questions where it's a conspiracy that the government is poisoning us. And that's not what it is. They are composed of water vapor. They initially start out as droplets. Small liquid water droplets, and then freeze because it's so cold up there. But we ran an experiment with NASA back in the back in 1996, I think it was, where we flew through those to look at how they were made and what they were made out of. And they start as water drops and freeze out. And then they can grow really big and then precipitate, too. But they never, they're too high up, and they don't have enough water that it actually would reach the surface.
So, in other words, there's no harm.
There's no harm. Although people have been doing studies trying to figure out what the climatic impact might be, because you are adding water vapor into the upper atmosphere, and water vapor is a good greenhouse gas. So they've looked at what that impact might be.
You probably have not convinced everybody.
We have not convinced everybody. You can never convince everybody of anything, right? Didn't Lincoln say that, you know? Or something
probably.
Like that, right? You can convince half the people some of the time, whatever that saying is. But there's always going to be people who don't. I mean, there are people who believe the Earth is flat. I mean, how ridiculous is that?
Jerry in Shell Lake has something for us. Jerry, hi.
Hi, good morning. Or I guess afternoon. I am calling because I have a five-year-old grandson that has long been fascinated by weather and would rather watch the Weather Channel than cartoons.
Good for your grandson.
Are there any sources you can think of that would be good for resources for him, books that you could recommend or a place to go to find books?
How old is he again?
He's five.
Five.
I don't know of any books myself, but I wonder if a search, you know, like a Google search for weather books for kids or something wouldn't give you an opening to quite a number of resources of which I'm unaware. I think that might be a way to do it. I had one favorite book I used to read to my kids. I don't remember the name of the book or the author, so this is no help at all except to tell you that there's such things out there. This was a story about one of these October nor'easters, the kind that I grew up with in New England, and it was really great. It was really great. The day before, the day after, and walking along the beach finding stuff. It was a great book.
And I am now panicking trying to remember a series of books for kids that I reviewed as an expert, and they were all different weather ones about tornadoes and thunderstorms and hurricanes and things like that. So if you send me an email, I can send you what that series is. There was like five of them or so that I reviewed.
I'll go to the WPR website and see if there's something there. Yeah, he would rather look at a weather radar of rainfall than sometime to do anything else.
Wow, that's you are lucky.
You are lucky.
Yeah,
that's a young man destined for success right there.
And I told him he could study it in college, so he can't wait to get there.
Great.
Not just in college, but at the University of Wisconsin, Madison.
Probably the best.
Get him
place.
To the best college.
Yeah, we'll be waiting for him. That's only 13 years. I may still be on the faculty.
And so I think we have your contact, but just in case we don't, what's your email address?
It's steve@ssec.wisc.edu.
All right.
Okay.
Or just go to Wisconsin and type in, where is Steve Ackerman? And Alexa. See what Alexa tells you.
Right.
Thank you very much, Jerry, for calling. Well, that's an uplifter. Mark in Green Bay, hi.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. I'm wondering about the minimum and the maximum angle that a rainbow can subtend on an opposite horizon. Twice last week we had rainbows that were just at sunset, and it looked like it was about 120 degree angles between the base on it. I was wondering if you know the answer to that.
I don't.
Oh, you know, I don't know the number. I'm trying to pull the numbers out of figures that we've had in our books about what that range is. I think the sun has to be at your back, and the angle between the sun, you, and the rainbow, I think, is either 47 or 52. One may be for the primary and the other one through the secondary. Is that what you're asking, or are you asking about the width of the rainbow?
The width of the rainbow at the base, it was well over 90 degrees, I thought close to 120 degrees, you know, if you took an arc.
Wow.
Oh, so that'll depend on how high the sun is in relation to you. So if the sun goes up higher, then it'll pick up. The bow itself rise up.
Will rise up.
Yeah, and if you're in a plane, you could actually get an entire circle.
Wow.
Yeah.
On that note, we're finished. Steve Ackerman, John Martin, our guests, our weather guys, and they will be back the last Monday of, what month are we in? Oh, November. It'll be the next one. It'll be November. Thank you for listening. Please stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.